In recent years, America has marked 50 years since a number of key moments in the civil rights movement. The March on Washington, the murder of Medgar Evers, the Bloody Sunday at the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. This year marks a half century since a killing that hits closer to home. Jonathan Daniels, a native of Keene, New Hampshire, was killed in the summer of 1965, and Keene State College is holding a series of events this year about Daniels' life and legacy. Larry Benequist is professor emeritus at Keene State and one of the makers of the documentary Here I Am, Send Me, The Journey of Jonathan Daniels, which will air on New Hampshire Public Television this month and will be screened this weekend at Keene State's Red Fern Art Center. Larry, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Here I Am, Send Me. Where was Jonathan Daniels before he went to Alabama, and what compelled him to join up with the civil rights movement?
He was studying to be an Episcopal minister in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the Episcopal Theological School. He had a huge amount of respect for Martin Luther King. In fact, when King put out a call after the events of March 7th, 1965, when so many people were beaten and hurt when they were trying to walk to Montgomery, he went to chapel, as all the students had to do, and he was saying a specific prayer, the Magnificat, that has to do with Mary, the Mother of God. It flashed into his mind a quote from Isaiah, that when God says, well, who's going to go for us? Who's going to implement these changes that have to happen to save the human race? And Isaiah said, well, here am I, send me. And Jonathan, I don't think he was being grandiose. I think he saw it as his duty, his job to help. He was that way as a youth. His friends report that. It was in his family history. And I think for him, it was like breathing in air to go.
People who knew him in Keene or in New England wouldn't have been surprised to hear where he was going and what he was planning to do.
No, I don't think they would have. Interviewing his friends, we often would get reports of his extreme generosity. One aspect that is of interest is that many of his friends were from what we would consider the working class. Now, his father was a physician. His mother was very, very aware of these class distinctions. I was not always pleased with Jonathan's choice of friends, but we came to the conclusion after reading what he had to say and so forth, we're not even sure Jonathan saw these distinctions or was aware of them. We think he was blind to issues of class and race.
And he was with a multiracial group on August 20th, 1965. What happened to Jonathan Daniels?
Well, he had been arrested a week before for protesting in the town of Fort Deposit. Fort Deposit in Lowndes County had a history of abusing its black customers who would come into the stores. They would get slapped. They wouldn't get waited on. They'd get pushed out. You know, the county was 80% African Americans, and not one of them had ever voted. So Jonathan was arrested with two dozen African American protesters, many of them teenagers, many of them women. One other white person, Father Richard Morris Rowe, a young Catholic priest from Chicago, they were taken to the jail in Haynesville, Alabama, and put in separate cells and kept there for a week. Jonathan could have left. He could have been bailed out. Two Episcopal priests came to try to get him to accept bail, and he refused. He wanted it to go to a federal trial. He was so upset that, you know, their right to picket was being impeded, so he stayed. And then on Friday, somebody signed them out. And to this day, we don't know who did that. And all of them were let out of prison. They were forced off the jail property into the street. So then Jonathan and Father Morris Rowe and Joyce Bailey and Ruby Sales went to a little store, a Varner's Cash store, where you could buy a drink as an integrated group. And as they approached the stairs, Jonathan was in the lead with Ruby, who was, I think, 16-year-old, I believe I have her age correct, from an African-American civil rights worker from Georgia. They started to walk up the stairs, and Mr. Coleman came out. He was a deputy sheriff, by the way, with a pistol on his side and a 12-gauge shotgun, and ordered them in no uncertain terms off his property, which wasn't his property. There's not really much controversy about what happened. According to Ruby and consistent testimony, Coleman leveled his gun at her. She felt somebody yank her out of the way from the back. She heard a shot, and she turned, and the gentleman was on the ground. He was dead by the time he hit the ground. Father Morris Rowe turned to run, and he was shot in the back. It missed his spine, but he still is in pain and walks with a limp 50 years later.
Some of those who were killed in the civil rights movement are remembered better than others. How has Jonathan Daniels' memory fared over the last 50 years?
Well, it's very interesting you ask that, Brady, because when we first applied for grant money years ago to start our film on Jonathan Daniels, the person at the office said, I can't justify giving money for someone that we've never heard of. And our argument was, well, that's why we want to make a movie on him. Our theory is he falls outside the narrative of Selma and the March to Montgomery. After the completed march, several weeks later, 95% of people went back home. Their job there was done. Daniels and his friend Judith looked around and they saw how alone these vulnerable people were who had fought so hard, these African Americans, and they said, we've got to stay. So he did stay. He moved in with an African-American family. He did come home in June for a couple of weeks to take care of paperwork at his school, to visit his family. He gave a lecture on Lake Winnipesaukee at a Christian youth conference. And then he went back. He drove back. That made what he did very unusual. But as you can see, where do you place them in this narrative of what happened a Bloody Sunday, which with the implementation of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, the period in the minds of some had ended. Jonathan died 14 days after that. I think the nation was exhausted by all of this. But now it's changing. I mean, the Virginia Military Institute has a Jonathan Daniels Humanitarian Award. This year it went to Representative John Lewis. Their first award was given to President Jimmy Carter. Canterbury Cathedral honors him, along with Martin Luther King, as the only two Americans listed in their Chapel of Martyrs and Saints of the 20th century. Virginia Military Institute, where he's an alumnus, he was a valedictorian. He's an honored son of the school, and we're very proud to say that our film is required viewing for the freshmen. I think things are changing.
Your film came out at a time when then-President Bill Clinton was calling for a national conversation on race, and in 2015, we're seeing and hearing a lot of difficult conversations around racial issues. When you look back at your film and about Jonathan Daniels' story, what is it that resonates for you today?
We show the film often to interested students here at the college, and a question that they'll often ask is, are avenues still open to us for that kind of courage for social change? And the answer is, of course, yes, maybe more so because of the Internet. My feeling is, not everyone would agree with this maybe, but the students tend to be altruistic in many ways. They want to change the world. They don't want to stay the way it is. And they see someone like Daniels, who his commitment was so profound, they ask questions about, well, what do you think was on Jonathan's mind? There's plenty of evidence to suggest that Jonathan was ready to do what was necessary, probably from a very early age. So students inquire about that. They want to know what avenues one can take to do this. What do you do to Habitat for Humanity? Do you join the Peace Corps? And so forth. They often ask questions like that. Also, it shows a side of American idealism that I think is very important to all of us. Jonathan saw himself as a witness in the Greek sense of a witnessing soul, watching what's going on and reporting back to the rest of us what's happening. Not everybody in Keene agreed with what he did. Some people thought he was a fool for going south. The people would said after he was murdered, well, what did he expect would happen? But the Keene Sentinel and others found what he did to be very profound, very spiritual. That's how change comes about. So our students are interested in it, and I think people still are.
Well, Larry Benequist, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Brady. Thanks for thinking to ask me about it.
Larry Benequist is Professor Emeritus at Keene State and one of the makers of the 1999 documentary Here I Am, Send Me, The Journey of Jonathan Daniels, which will air on New Hampshire Public Television this month. It will also be screened this weekend at Keene State's Redfern Art Center.